Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green for making this afternoon seem even sunnier. Jenny's back tomorrow at 3. It's Thursday, the 1st of April, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Stephen Ferris is with us to preview a huge weekend of European rugby.
You've got the older, more experienced players that have been through it all, really, so the good days, but you know, they've had some pretty painful ones as well. And then you've kind of the younger players who are a little bit more, I guess, fearless, really. Hopefully we have got it right in terms of selection.
Alan Cawley is with us a day early to preview the weekend's football. Arsenal versus Liverpool is always good for a goal.
Scored by Agger, and Keane's onside here and scores splendidly. What a strike from Robbie Keane. And boy, that will improve his life. That is a fantastic hit. Direct football, but a quite spectacular finish from a former Tottenham Hotspur striker at Arsenal.
Plus, we've Jane Mangan on a great weekend of racing in Fairy Hills, and you might have heard some news about Dublin GAA.
Game on 2FM.
If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Donica mentioned Dublin GAA there, and we are going to get straight to the breaking news. Dublin GAA has suspended football manager Desi Farrell, as you might have heard in the news, for 12 weeks after accepting that players breached COVID-19 rules. So early this morning, members of Farrell's squad were pictured in the paper. They'd been photographed by the Irish Independent training at a GAA club, and we are joined now by Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent. Colm, a 12-week suspension, a serious error of judgment according to the statement released by Dublin GAA. They've acted very fast, but is this likely to be the end of it now?
I doubt it, Marie, to be honest. I think obviously earlier in the day Croke Park issued a statement saying that they too will be investigating it, and I'm sure there has been communication with Dublin, but suspending the Dublin manager Desi Farrell is one thing. I think the GAA will be looking at additional punishments around this, the loss of home venue for at least one league game, being most likely if it's consistent with other breaches which happened earlier in the year. And that's not to say that the GAA, you know, perhaps they, you know, they won't want to be seen to be dictated to either by Dublin, notwithstanding that Dublin have moved fast to acknowledge this and to accept wrongdoing on behalf of their management and players on this. But I think the GAA will take their own look at it. They'll weigh it against, obviously, their statement on Tuesday night, just an hour after the Taoiseach Micheál Martin had green-lighted the return of inter-county games. And I think in that light, it will take a very, very serious look at this breach. And there is a possibility for more. Obviously, 3 months is consistent with what Ronan McCarthy from Cork got. But I wouldn't rule out that there would be some additional censure around this. And it could be. I mean, I wouldn't like to preempt it either. But there could be a weightier ban for this, given that it is happening against public health advice, which wasn't actually the case back in early January, when it wasn't clear that elite teams, or GAA had lost that elite status. The assumption was still there that an elite group could train in the eyes of the state, but obviously not in the eyes of the GAA at that time. So there is a slight distinction there. Having said that, 3 months consistent with Ronan McCarthy, it may just stick.
Okay, so if it does transpire that the 3 months, the 12 weeks sticks, we're trying to anticipate a fixture schedule. What would that bring us up to if we were just to predict where we would be in 12 weeks' time from a fixtures point of view?
Well, obviously the fixtures won't be finalised until next week, but it very, very much looks like that there will be a block of 5 weeks of league action in football. That's 3 weeks, three rounds of the league, of a truncated league. Obviously, the division's been split in half, so that's three games, semi-finals and relegations, playoffs over the next weekend, and finals then. So that's 5 weeks. We have 2 weeks to go to the start, say, from this weekend coming. There's 2 weeks to the start, that's the 19th. Then there's a four-week run-in, a four-week pre-season, that's 6 weeks. 5 weeks of the league is 11 weeks. Then there will be a week's break to the start of the provincial championship. I'm only making an assumption here that I think there'll be a straight knockout here and not a qualifier. So the schedule may just ease slightly. So you would be looking at, in the 13 weeks from now, Dublin will probably be playing a Leinster quarterfinal, and that falls outside this current 12-week ban. So by accepting it and expediting it now, they are probably clearing Desi to return to the sidelines for the Leinster Championship.
Okay, that we will probably find that out next week when we do get the exact fixtures. So just to focus on the story this morning, Colm, and the pictures and the knock-on effect. As you mentioned, it was barely 12 hours since Croke Park had issued a warning to clubs and almost a plea to clubs that to stick within the guidelines, because we're in such a precarious position and everybody wants to get back out playing, adults, children, everybody wants to watch Gaelic games. Is there any chance that seeing these pictures could in any way derail the return to play?
Well, this probably wouldn't be, you probably wouldn't be asking me this, and we wouldn't be discussing this really, unless, but we are, because the GAA had actually flagged that themselves, that they had suggested that any breach could jeopardise the further rollout. So obviously, in their conversations with the government or with the Department of Sport or anything around this, maybe that was considered a factor. Personally, I don't think so. I don't think it will jeopardise it. While it is embarrassing for the GAA and their dealings with the Department of Sport, where they make the case to return to action and against the earlier breaches, but obviously, as I've said there in the previous in our previous conversation there, that there wasn't awareness that GAA teams had lost their elite status at the beginning of January when those other breaches happened, but there was now. So maybe it's looked at in much more serious light, and that there was only two weeks away, and you know the feeling will be, well, why couldn't they have waited? I suppose the nature of GAA teams is, you know, and membership, wider membership, is, you know, compliance doesn't come easily in these situations. Again, I'm surprised the team that you would expect would least need to be jumping out ahead here would be the six-time All-Ireland champions, who, to all intents and purposes, will probably win the Leinster Championship and be in an All-Ireland semi-final in August anyway. So you would wonder, what is the rush here for Dublin just to get out? Now, obviously, frustration they haven't been together collectively, but they went ahead and met up in Innisfail, where they obviously conduct their winter training session, and they jumped the gun on this and obviously have been found out and are paying the penalty. And you know, they've such a strong reputation within the game, not just within the game, within Irish sport. I mean, they are the ultimate elite GAA team, the most successful team ever, and obviously, whether they like it or not, they are judged by different standards here.
Colm, that's the point. They've been the pin-up team for standards, for, you know, community, from looking out for each other. It really is a shock that, you know, our not only our best footballers, but our standard setters have conducted themselves in this way.
Yeah, I think that's probably the surprise element, Donegh, is that, yes, that these really have... Dublin have led pretty much some blemished careers throughout in terms of rules, regulations, all of that. That they, you know, they've conducted themselves well. Obviously, there's been incidents at the end of All Ireland finals when, you know, in the heat of battle and in the heat of the moment, things have been done that might probably just, you know, go against, contradict that reputation that they have. I'm talking about, you know, delaying tactics at the end of All Ireland finals, but that's probably forgotten about in the passing of time. Their brilliance and their just everything about them washes that away. But this one will hang around this Dublin team for a while. That their compliance here, the one team that you would have expected to be compliant in this regard, and we take it that several others aren't, but that Dublin were caught up on this. And that is a surprising aspect, because they are held up on such a pedestal, not just in GAA, but in Irish sport. They're equitable to any of the teams in Irish sport, and I include professional teams in that regard too.
Yeah, because there are plenty of people jumping to their defence as well, Colm, and you see that on social media, and alluding to the fact as well that they might not be the only team, club or county, that are in breach of the COVID rules. But as you said, they are the team that are the standard bearers, and there's also plenty of people who are working on the front line, who haven't seen their parents in quite a long time, haven't seen their grandchildren, are in difficult situations because of COVID, and they feel hurt because a team like Dublin has gone out and flouted the rules.
Yeah, and obviously, Maria, it's back to perception and image in this regard. You know, it depends what side of the COVID restrictions debate you are on. I won't say debate, but what side you're on, really. Were the risks great in Dublin convening a training session in Inishfales yesterday morning? Probably not. Outdoor activity is 20 times less likely for transmission. It's physical exercise. People will shrug their shoulders and say, what's the big deal here? But there are rules and regulations here. And, you know, I happen to believe that, you know, elite intercounty teams should be back training by now. And it's, the intercounty competition was run very, very well. And there must be a distinction between what happened at the end of the club championships in terms of attendances and celebrations. But beyond that, you would have to say and make that distinction that the intercounty leagues and championships through October, December to December were run very, very well. And I think pretty much anyone could say that that was there or watched on, and even the record of it, and there was no evidence of on-field transmission and all of that. But it's the image of your top team going out and breaching COVID regulations. You can shrug your shoulders, but the rules and regulations are there for everybody to observe, and you probably expect more your elite and your standard bearers to observe these more than anyone else. So from that point of view, as I said, rules and regulations are there to be observed, and in this case they haven't.
So I'm not going to name any of the players involved, but they are quite easy identifiable from the story and from the pictures. Do you think that there's an onus on these players now to come out and apologise the way that that Dublin GA have in their statement? Should they be coming out as a collective group of players, do you think?
Well, I think it's probably reflected in the statement there that the management and players together, you know, recognise that this was an error of judgment. And in time, some of those players, and, you know, some of the finest players in the game and great leaders and good, strong personalities in that, I'm sure in their own time that they will find a way to communicate around this. You obviously won't see it in the short term, but over time, I'm sure that they'd be well capable of acknowledging or expressing those sentiments in their own way and in their own right.
Colm, I think that you and I and probably a lot of people and a lot of listeners who are texting in have all heard anecdotal evidence of other teams that are training and might have seen teams training in parks and in public areas, albeit in small groups, but nonetheless still out when they shouldn't be. What do you think is going to happen now to the other teams that are training? Do you think that they're either going to look at the Dubs and go, right, well, the Dubs have been training, we need to get our act together? Are they all going to take a step back from what they have supposedly been doing?
Well, I suppose this puts this whole idea of teams training outside of obviously when there's restrictions and prohibitions around this puts it in the public eye, and that makes it more difficult for teams to conduct clandestine training sessions, because now the public has an awareness of it, that it is a big issue. So the public effectively, as much as the public will police it, as much as the GA or the media in that regard. So that makes it slightly more difficult. I've no doubt that teams will continue to have a good setup, and some of them have, away from prying eyes. I mean, I'm pretty sure Dublin probably thought they had that yesterday morning too. But it will certainly, I would imagine that it will make managers and even county board officials who are on board with this, it will make them more wary. But they only have two more weeks before they get the official green light for this. So, you know, maybe some of them will pull back a little bit, but it does make it a little bit more hazardous. And you're right, it is. I mean, the anecdotal evidence is there, and always the challenge is, well, produce the evidence and show it. Well, in this case, it has been shown.
And Colm, just one other issue that probably and potentially could arise from this as well is the insurance issue. So is there insurance for these players if they're training in an unsanctioned GA training session?
No, there's no insurance, and, you know, by decree, no GA club is supposed to be open for activity either. And actually, ironically, the Dublin chief executive, John Costello, issued a circular to clubs last week reminding them of their obligations in that regard to keep pitches and their facilities closed. So that was last week, and obviously the GA doubled down on their own warning on Tuesday night as well, and 12 hours later you have this. So no, there would be no insurance cover for anybody who's conducting training at the moment.
Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent, thanks so much for joining us. I have to say, when I opened the paper this morning, this was not a story I was expecting to see. Let's take a very quick break.
with Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein your way. Game on 2FM.
This is an egg hunt with a difference. Champions Cup Rugby is back. This Good Friday, we'll have full match commentary of the clash of two powerhouses of European rugby when Pro 14 champions Leinster take on Toulon. It's all live on a Game On special this Friday from 5:30 on 2FM.
Game On with Marie, Donica and Ruby.
With Green Farm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein your way.
Okay, the Heineken Champions Cup and Challenge Cup may have changed format due to COVID, but with the last 16 both getting underway with incredible matches and huge Irish interest this weekend, especially on a Game On special which gets underway tomorrow at 5:30. We're delighted to talk about the pinnacle of the rugby game with Ulster, Ireland and British and Irish linebacker Stephen Ferris. Feds, how are you?
Not too bad, thanks, Donica. Everything's good. The sun has eventually started to shine here. And the golf courses are open. More importantly, Donica, the golf courses are open.
So, it took about 30 seconds for you to get that in.
It's so funny, well, how so funny how we think you're thinking about golf. I'm thinking about a sun lounger.
Yeah, I know. I wouldn't mind a sun lounger either, but no, it's good just to get out today, get the head charred, but very much looking forward to the rugby this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be a great weekend and it's great to have it back. We know it's changed format, but just before we get into all the games, Stephen, such, you know, a rescheduled Six Nations, a Pro 14 final, players will be hurting coming into these. We talk about in dressing rooms going to the well, but there's players like Robbie Henshaw that have gone to the well an awful lot now.
Yeah, there is. It just seems to be week in, week out, doesn't it? And I know the lads got an extended break through the first lockdown of COVID-19, and they were keeping themselves as active as possible. A lot of home gymming, you know, taking themselves out to local pitches just to do a bit of running or a bit of cardio, keep themselves ticking over. But, you know, the games are coming thick and fast. And, Donica, the games are coming thick and fast at a really high level. You know, a lot of these guys are turning it out in the international jersey, then they're straight into a Pro 14 final, then they're straight into a European Cup knockout game. You know, huge, huge games which can be very telling on the body, very physical encounters. But, you know, some of the guys, you know, like Robbie Henshaw, like Tadhg Byrne, they're playing so well that I'm sure they just want to keep on trucking. And it'd be hard to prize the jersey off their back at the minute.
In fairness to Leo Cullen, though, he has seemed to manage things pretty well, and he's four changes now coming into the weekend with Sexton, James Lowe, Tadhg Furlong and Ryan Baird coming in, which are four big players and four rested players.
Yeah, he's just got, you know, a luxury of being able to mix it up. A really strong bench as well. I'm so excited to see Cian Healy, Keller and Furlong going head-to-head against Gross, Tullafua and Gigi Ashvili for Toulon. It's just such a battle up front. You know, Donica will tell you, it's all about winning the battle against the French teams up front. And if they can do that, the maestro that is Johnny Sexton at out half, thankfully he's recovered from a bit of a bang to the head. I think it was more a bang to the nose last week than actually head trauma, so that's brilliant to see. And young Ryan Baird's partnering Devon Toner in the second row. You know, a change in there, Fardy's been put onto the bench. So yeah, it really is a luxury, you know, for Leo Cullen to be able to pick from a lot of players. I think it was 57 players used in the Pro 14 throughout the season. So, no, it's just brilliant, and they'll be really chomping at the bit. But just on, like, you know, we're talking a lot about Leinster here. Toulon have the likes of Etzebeth, Parise, you know, Rudy Wolf, who's been around the block, 37 years of age, playing in the centre. No Man Ollie playing this week. He played last week in their game. They got heavily beaten last week, but you know, no Man Ollie. But yeah, it's going to be a real interesting encounter. Leinster are huge favourites this weekend after their big win against Munster. But I think it might be close from what people think.
Seven European crowns between them, so I know Leinster are heavy favourites, but there's a huge amount of history there and they're two big rugby dynasties, so are you going to expect fireworks?
I think so, yeah. And you know, when you talk about Toulon, everybody just rewinds the clock a little bit about know, the couple of wins that they had, the players that they sign, you know, it was owned by a bit of a madman who liked to go out and splash the money and get the world-class players.
Donica's smiling here, by the way, when you mentioned splashing the money.
It was a dream team, wasn't it? It really was incredible what they were doing.
Yeah, it was. It was just bonkers, and everybody was like, well, how do we play catch-up here? You know, whoever wins the World Cup, he just seemed to sign four or five of those World Cup lads and brought them in, year out. So, no, he's... I think he's actually parted ways, Donica, you correct me if I'm wrong, with the club. They want to go in a slightly different direction, but they've still got a couple of really old heads in there that could produce one-off performances. I think Leinster will just be continuing to apply the pressure. I just don't know. Leinster just find a weakness in the team and go after it. You know, at halftime against Munster in the Pro 14 final, I think Leo Cullen was, you know, talking about keeping it a bit tighter, taking the two of them up front. You know, as soon as they emptied the bench, they just grind Munster down, and they have a very good knack of getting over the line and suffocating teams. So they'll be looking to do exactly that to Toulon. I still fancy Leinster to win this game. But I think Toulon will give them a scare, especially in the first half.
Stephen, you mentioned it there, and if there has been a weakness of the game, we haven't seen it from Leinster in a Pro 14, but everyone will look at the Saracens game, the bigger games, and Toulon, you mentioned some of their forwards there. This is a massive pack. They will look to, you know, that Saracens model, and is that what you're expecting from this game? Kind of forward dominated, and that Leinster have to stand up to?
Yeah, well, if you were the coach of Toulon, that's certainly an area that you'd be trying to exploit. Although that's it's a hard job, it's a hard task. You know, you furlong back after a long injury. He looks like he's never been away from the game. We all know the social media video flying around of him dancing to the jig. It was absolutely hilarious. It's on my social media if you want to check it out. Kelleher's back into good form, and Cian Healy is, you know, a bit of a beast in there. So I'm just not sure there's too many teams that would give Leinster a hard time up front at the minute, especially with Furlong back. But if there is one team that might eke a few penalties or, you know, cause a bit of upset in there, it could possibly be Toulon.
Okay, so we're going to get you to call this one for us, Fez.
Yeah, no, I'm going for Leinster on this one. You know, they are overwhelming favourites for sure. I think a 10 to 15 point win, but it's not going to come easy.
Okay, then we'll move to Saturday. Munster taking on Toulouse. This is the seventh time they've met in Europe, and there's a bit of a race on at the moment to see who has the most appearances in the latter stages, both trying to compete for 19. Of course, they'd like to have more success, but they've been knocking at the door for an awful lot of time. Munster, really disappointing. An empty Thomond Park that they have to pick themselves up for.
Oh, Donica, I suppose a bit like yourself, there was lots of expectation getting into the Pro 14 final. It just felt like, you know, with the three or four performances leading up to the final, they were sort of getting and making strides and getting somewhere. And it was almost like they took a bit of a backward step. They didn't really look like creating too much. I think they only made one line break, and it was a half line break when Gavin Coombs just, you know, broke through an initial tackle. Peter Mahoney went off injured. The front row, Cronin, Scannell and Ryan didn't really stand up to the Leinster front row, and, you know, they lost that battle up front. And they also lost the kicking battle, which was huge in the outcome of that game. But they got to dust themselves down. They got to pick themselves back up again and put all their energy, all their focus into this match. It's their only chance of silverware for this season. And, you know, Toulouse, they were beaten last week, I think, 29-16 by Montpellier. I know they're flying high at the top of the top 14, but they might be a little bit vulnerable. But Donica, they're welcoming back players from France. They're welcoming back Entomac. You know, Gael Ficou, Colby will probably be back on the wing in his favourite position. You know, there might be a couple other guys in the pack that come back in there. Jerome Kano as well. This is his last season for Toulouse. So, you know, lots of pedigree to choose from. And I think Munster is going to be another hard day at the office, especially if they lose that battle up front. A bit like Leinster, if they lose that battle, they're going to be in for a tough day.
Stephen, Don Lennon made the point on the RTÉ Rugby podcast that the likes of Tadhg Byrne looked like he was running on empty. When you take that into consideration, plus the fact that they're picking themselves up from a really devastating loss, are they going to be able to mount some sort of a challenge, do you think, on Saturday?
Yeah, I definitely think they're going to be able to mount a challenge. You know, they're at home. Their European form this season has been very good. We remember the Clermont away victory, which nobody kind of expected. But, you know, their key players have to pick it up. Like, Joey Carberry he was poor at the weekend, you know, defensively and offensively, he was poor. And they got to get their kicking game right. You know, Conor Murray was on the talk of the town and everybody's lips had come the end of that England game, and then all of a sudden he seemed a bit rusty against Leinster. So we need the big guys, the big game players to step up and really make a mark. But when you say big game players, you just look across and to the Toulouse team, and you know they're just littered with really top class players. And you know Toulouse are favourites, believe it or not, they're favourites for this match, and it's hard to look past them. It really is, because of the situation that Munster find themselves in. But never write off Munster, especially when their backs are against the wall. They usually come out fighting for sure. And I think this is the game of the weekend. This is going to be epic. It's going to be nip and tuck, and I think it's going to be very, very close. And just lastly, Wayne Barnes is refereeing this match, so anything could happen.
It could go on for 2 weeks.
So like, it's been a bit of an emotional roller coaster for you this week. I've been kind of treading carefully around you. How are you feeling now? We're Thursday, we're a couple of days away from the game. Are you feeling confident?
I am. Do you know what, Marie? It's tough because you always get emotionally invested, and we always said it. They're scars that'll never go away. When you lose a game in a Pro 14 final like that, and Stephen, you know better than anyone, when you don't fire a shot, when you come in afterwards and realise that you didn't even put your best performance out there. But normally you have a pre-season and a time to reflect on it. To have such little time before playing an incredible game again, and Stephen mentioned the X Factor players there, the Intermax, the Colbys, the DePot. Like, they're incredible, but what a front five Toulouse have. I promise you, there is a sledgehammer coming, and if you don't answer that, and I'll be honest, you need 23 against Toulouse. They're flying high at the top of the Pro 14. Stephen mentioned they lost last weekend, but I'm wondering, are they trying to juggle their squad and keep an eye on things? So I'm really nervous, but like every Munster supporter, there's small things for me. I want to see a Munster-like performance. Honestly, Maria, I know this sounds weak and a bit shallow, but I nearly don't care about the result. I just want the lads to go out and absolutely empty themselves. If they do that and we're not good enough, you could put up your hand. But not seeing a performance, I know from my point of view, and an awful lot of Munster supporters, is very disappointing. But Fez, just about that pack, because I know you're chatting about Wayne Barnes, and that is a weapon of a pack to lose or bring it.
Yeah, it is a weapon of a pack, and unfortunately for Ulster, they've had to face that pack on numerous occasions over the last couple of years. They always seem to get drawn against Toulouse, and I think it was the quarter final away in last year's European Cup where Ulster had to go away to Toulouse, and Toulouse almost looked like they were in second, third gear, and Ulster threw absolutely everything at them, and just, you know, the quality that they possess, the physicality that they show. But it's also the mental side of the game. I think the mentality has changed, Donica, with the French teams a little bit. I'm not saying it happens every week, but certainly the mentality has changed. They certainly think that the European Cup is a much bigger deal than it probably used to be. And, you know, Toulouse going away from home, an empty Thomond Park with a huge pack, with a couple of superstars in there as well, they're certainly going to fancy their chances.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so call it, Fez.
Do you know what? I'm going, just with the way it is this week, I'm going with favourites. All favourites out of the game, so... Sorry, Donica, I'm going for Toulouse.
Okay, we'll get on with it. Then moving into Saturday evening, Leicester Tigers taking on Connacht. A lot of changes in the Connacht coaching ticket at the moment. We heard of a few coaches moving out, and today it was confirmed that an old teammate of ours, Mossy Lawler and Cullum Tucker, will take up those posts. But they'll have it all to do taking on the Tigers.
Yeah, they will. You probably know Mossy a lot better than me. I don't know him that well, and you'll probably be able to expand a bit. But, you know, just on Leicester Tigers, you know, they were right down at the bottom of the league, the Gallagher Premiership, at the start of the season, hanging around with the likes of Gloucester and Worcester at the bottom, and they've picked themselves up. Their coaching has changed a bit as well. Jordy Murphy, who you and I know very well, Dunners, he's parted ways. And Steve Forthwick is in there. They're seventh in the table. You know, they beat Newcastle last week. Ellis Gaines was up to his old tricks again, causing all sorts of nonsense. Even before kickoff, yeah. I don't know what he was at like, but I seen the beast, Marawara, give him a bit of a shout out on Twitter. I think he's looking at a charity boxing match or something. I'll stay clear of that.
Absolutely. How do you think it'll go?
I fancy Leicester. They are favourites for this, and you know, just the big pack, the dominance, edgy, you know, the physicality, the bite that Leicester seem to have got back in their game. Unfortunately for Connacht, I'm going for Leicester, and you know, Connacht, they have to throw the ball around. I think they're not going to take them on up front. They got to be fast and free flowing, but also very, very accurate. And I just can't see them getting a win away from home.
Okay, then we move on to Sunday evening, and it's a late kickoff for Ulster. They take on Jerry Felhenry's Harlequins at 7:45. Harlequins have had, you know, a change in the coaching ticket, but they are playing incredible rugby. But this is an opportunity for Ulster, isn't it?
It is an opportunity. I've been reading in the press actually over the last couple of days that we're not sure what type of team Harlequins are going to throw out. Well, Danny Kerr, you know, Mike Brown, Joe Marler, you know, the spine of that Harlequins team that have been there for years and years, will they play? There's so much emphasis and focus on the Gallagher Premiership teams to do well in the league so that they can qualify again for European competitions the next year. We know how much money there is as well, Donica, in the Gallagher Premiership. So will their focus be turned? I'm not sure. Like, they lost last week 35-33 to Bristol, scored lots of points. Marcus Smith is an outstanding rugby player at out half, and given any opportunity can cause a lot of mischief. But a fancy Ulster, like, just to kind of run them very, very close anyway. I think it's going to be another good game. And I'm not sure what Marcel Cornelius could see his injury is like at the minute. He's been out injured for the last couple of weeks, and it'd be great to have him back. He's just been named the Pro 14 player of the season, and 9 tries scored in the league. And, you know, he's been unbelievable for Ulster. So if he's playing, I'm going to go for Ulster. If he's not, I'm going to go for Harlequins.
You mentioned that John Cooney, also named in that Pro 14 Dream Team, another player that always puts in massive performances, but an opportunity now again when we're chatting about, you know, tugging out in green.
Yeah, like everybody up here, Donegal, around Ulster, just scratching their heads the way John Cooney hasn't been given more opportunity. You know, reflecting back and looking back, he was supposed to start the Italy game, I believe, before COVID hit, and then, you know, he was back out of the selection with Andy Farrell. But he's just got to keep knocking the door, keep banging it. If it opens and he gets another chance, then happy days. If he doesn't, then I think he might be off to another club, and when his contract expires or slightly earlier, if a club wants to get rid of him or if a club wants to buy him up. So yeah, interesting times ahead for John Cooney, but there's no question in Donegal what he's given to Ulster over the last couple of seasons and how good a player he is. So he'll have to have a good one on Sunday night, and hopefully it goes well for him.
Fez, before we leave you go, it isn't the format that we were all looking forward to, but there's some incredible games, even outside, you know, you look at Ron O'Gara's La Rochelle taking on Gloucester. It's going to be an incredible weekend of top quality rugby.
Gee, so all I'm going to do is sit in front of the TV and watch rugby Friday afternoon until Sunday night. Enjoy every bit of it. I'm also really excited to watch Exeter versus Lyon. Lyon had a brilliant win last week. Exeter have actually been grinding results out, but have been stumbling over the line. Haven't been the force. You know, they are the reigning European champions. So I'm excited to see how they go. The likes of Sam Simmons. So yeah, it's just lots of quality games. And the thing about with this format is, Donners, I think that, you know, the quality is spread over both of the cups and not just the Champions Cup. So no, massively exciting, and you know, roll on the weekend, and hopefully the Irish teams can do us proud and get a few victories over the weekend also.
Absolutely. Stephen, as always, thanks so much for joining us. We'll have all the action of Leinster versus Toulon from tomorrow at 5:30.
Game on rugby.
UFM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to football. We're going to be looking ahead to all of the weekend's Premier League action and also the League of Ireland. But first, I'm going to start with the Republic of Ireland because the FAI confirmed today that they will play two friendlies this summer against Hungary and Andorra. And this was expected to be announced and confirmed, and it is now. Alan Cawley is with us. Alan, I have to say, I'm not looking forward to June when we're talking about Hungary and Andorra being must-win games.
Two crackers, Marie. Absolute crackers. Yeah, but I think it's important, I suppose, bar the two games and the fact that Stephen has penciled them in, I think it's probably most important that it's a 9-day camp and he'll get to spend a lot of time with the players on the training pitch, because that's been one of the major hindrances I feel for him, is the fact that the limited preparation time that they've had in the games. This is a new thing, obviously, with the times that we're living in, that we're having triple headers when the camp meet up, so you have very little time out on the training pitch. And when you're trying to implement a new style or a new philosophy or get your message across, whatever it is Stephen is trying to do with the players, it's very difficult when you're not actually doing it out on the pitch. You can have all the meetings you want, and you can have as much video sessions as you want, but you actually want to be out on the pitch with them going through different patterns of play and trying to implement that philosophy. So I think that's been a major hindrance, and I think the fact, obviously, the two games are going to help as well, the two friendlies, but I think it's most important that he gets as much time with them out on the training pitch, and that'll probably mean double sessions, even triple sessions, whatever the case may be. But the fact that he will have 9 days just to plan and, I suppose, prepare with them.
Okay, well, I think we could probably end up talking about the Republic of Ireland for this whole segment, but we need to park it now, Alan, and let's move on to the Premier League, because it's back and there is a big weekend and a lot of interesting games. I'm going to start with Arsenal and Liverpool because it's a big game for both of them, but they still do have European games as well to look forward to just a few days after it. How do you think they're going to approach it?
Yeah, well, I think it's an important game for both of them, as you say, Marie, but they're still talking about, I was listening to Arteta this morning in his press conference, and still talking about aspirations to get into Europe and the top four, and that ship has sailed, like, for Arsenal. They've been so inconsistent. That's been their major problem. The two games before the break as well, they struggled in those, and that's been a major problem for Arteta. They've done okay in Europe, in the Europa League, so there's still a route through then. But if you're looking at them at the table at the moment, they're ninth, Marie, sitting at the table, and I think it's been just a season of major inconsistency. And the jury is still very much out for me on Arteta. I understand it's a difficult job that he's taken over. He probably bought himself a lot of time in the bank and credibility, the fact that he won the cup so early. Like, you look at the situation maybe with Solskjaer and Man United, and for all the progress that maybe you might be seeing in terms of their league position, he still doesn't have a trophy. Arteta got a trophy last year, which was important for him, but the league form has been poor this year, so that's the issue that they need to address. In terms of Liverpool, by the time this game kicks off, they could be 8 points behind the top four. So are they going to get into the top four? I'm not so sure either, Marie. But the one plus that they have is that the form did pick up before the international break. They've had another extra couple of weeks with the international break to maybe recuperate and get another couple of players back. And we're not into the business end of things. And if they get some of their players back, obviously I don't think Van Dijk and Gomez will be back. But if they can get even one or two of some of the key players before the end of the season, as we say, coming into this business end of period, I think you might see their form improve, and it already did improve in the games before the window. So I still wouldn't rule out Liverpool even in terms of the Champions League, Marie, by the time we get to it. I'm not saying they're going to win it, but they're in with a shout. I definitely think they are, if they can get as many of their top players on the pitch.
And news today as well that Sergio Ramos is out for Real Madrid, which is, I think, a pretty big one.
Yeah, definitely. And I suppose you look across, the Lewandowski is out for Bayern Munich at the moment, so they're on the good side of the draw as well. If it's a good time to play Real Madrid, this is the time to play them. Not only the fact that Ramos is out, but they've been struggling in the league this year from the standards that they've set over the last number of years. So it's been an iffy period for them as well. So as I say, they're on the good side of the draw, and it'll be a good time to play Real Madrid. I fancy them against Arsenal as well at the weekend. I just think Arsenal are too inconsistent. I'm not sure Arteta knows exactly what his best 11 are, his chops and changes a lot. Obviously the issue with Aubameyang, and I think they're probably better without him. It'll be interesting to see, can they sign Odegaard as well? I think he's been really good for them since he's come in, and but I'd say Real Madrid might want him back.
Alan, another big game, Leicester taking on Man City. Is this the run in now for Man City? Do you see them getting it done quite quickly?
Yeah, but I think this is a difficult game, Donegal. Leicester had a really good period before the international break as well. They won three games on the trot, including the quarter-final against Man United, and they were very, very good in the FA Cup. So this will be by no means an easy game for Man City. They will get the job done eventually, but as you say, whether they'll get the 3 points at the weekend and just steamroll everybody for the next 2 or 3 weeks and get it done quickly, I'm not so sure. I think this will be a difficult game for them, and it's a good game for them as well, because they're obviously, the league will be wrapped up. They're preparing now for the Champions League. They have a tough game coming up against Borussia Dortmund. All eyes will focus on that and trying to win the Champions League. And this will be good preparation, particularly after the international break, to get the players back. A good, tough game to start off against Leicester, because, as we all said about Brendan Rodgers all year, they've had a brilliant season. They really have. I know they hit a little bit of a blip there a few weeks ago, and everybody thought maybe, will it replicate what happened with them last year when they fell out of the top four? I didn't think that would be the case at all, and I'm glad it hasn't been the case. They picked up their form again. As I say, got the 3 wins. Iheanacho has come in. He's been a revelation the last few weeks. So that's good as well in terms of players fighting for places, because they won the games without Maddison, because a lot of people were saying they're too reliant on maybe Vardy or Maddison, but it was good that Iheanacho has come in and done well. And this will be a tough game. So I'm looking forward. I think this is the game of the weekend, and I'm really looking forward to it, Donegal.
Jamie Vardy does love scoring goals against Guardiola's side. How do you nullify a player like him if you're Pep, and they've struggled in the past?
That's exactly it, Marie. That'll be the chat, I think, all week in preparation for this, because they have struggled against Vardy, because Man City tend to push up the pitch and play such a high line, because they dominate possession and they like to close the gaps between maybe the back four and the midfield and the forward, so there's not too much of a gap between those three units, and they really close up the pitch and condense the pitch in terms of trying to win the ball when they do lose it and turn it over high up the pitch as well. So they're always susceptible to that ball over the top, and there's no better in the league than Vardy at exploiting that. And as you said, he has done many times against Man City already, and earlier in the season they hammered him as well. So it'll be, as I say, it's a good game for Man City and Leicester, and I think Leicester will slowly fancy their chances. Rodgers done a job on them and Pep earlier in the season as well. It was absolutely unbelievable performance earlier on in the season, hammering them 5-2. So that will be interesting to see how that plays out. But you'd like to think Guardiola will have them well prepared, because that's their main threat, really, Leicester, in this match, that they'll be looking to obviously exploit Man City's, the gaps that they leave at the back.
Yeah, the other side of Manchester United taking on Brighton, and the international break probably came at the right time for Man United, didn't it?
It did, Donegal, yeah, because people were suggesting that maybe they were kind of running on empty. They had a lot of games, a busy schedule, so maybe it was, but the unfortunate thing prior to the break was the fact that they played the cup match. And I went back to the point there about Arteta obviously getting a cup. Solskjaer, I think, needs to maybe deliver a cup, and that was one of the opportunities, was the FA Cup, but they were well beaten by Leicester. Now, people might argue, well, I've just given Leicester a huge kind of recommendation there in terms of how good they've been. So it wasn't by no means an easy game, but in terms of opportunities to win a cup, it was a very good one for Man United, and they obviously came unstuck. So maybe it did come at a good time just to recharge the batteries and have a good go at the Europa League, because that's their best opportunity now, Donica. And I just think they need to maintain their form and finish second as well. I think the optics of all in terms of the progression that's been made there for Man United, I think it's huge, and you can't overemphasise just the fact that how big the perception and the optics are on the fact that they will finish second, or if they do finish second, if they were to drop down to third or fourth, all of a sudden you'll have people question Solskjaer again. I still don't think he's the man, as I've said all along, but I just think if they do finish second, it looks a whole lot better than them maybe just finishing third or fourth and falling out of the cups as well, or not delivering in the cups.
Alan, let's turn our attention now to the League of Ireland, because there are some really big games. Even though it's only the start of the league, it does feel like these are important games. And I think starting with Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers tomorrow night, which is on RTE television, it's really hard to know where Dundalk are at. 1 point out of 6. I don't think that was anything that people were expecting after their performance in the President's Cup.
No, they've had a dreadful start, Marie. They really have. And especially when you look at the games that they've played as well. Before the season started, they had Finn Harps. And obviously last week, the opening night, they drew with Sligo. So that, to be fair, that's a tough game. Sligo have improved, as we know, this year. So that was a tough game. So maybe coming out of there with a point, you may accept that. But you'd definitely be going into the following week against Finn Harps thinking we'll beat Finn Harps and we'll have 4 points out of 6 and we're up and running. But as you say, they've only got 1 point out of 6, and that's been a poor return. And they're obviously going into the Lions then tomorrow night against Halle, albeit with no fans, but it's still the toughest game on the calendar against the best team and the champions. So that's a huge game for them. You could look at it both ways. ways in terms of it could be a good time to play them, because obviously they'd be looking for a reaction and they don't need any motivation in getting up for the game against Shamrock Rovers. But I would kind of tend to look at it the other way, Marie, in the sense that you mentioned there, where Dundalk at? And I watched them 3 weeks ago in the President's Cup and I thought they looked well prepared for the start of the season. But then, as I've just said there, they've only picked up 1 point out of six. So I would worry for them going into the game tomorrow night. Shamrock Rovers didn't play last week because of the game against Derry was called off. But we watched them, obviously, on the opening night against St. Pat's. And they still are the best team. They're obviously missing Jack Byrne and McInniff, and that's going to affect any team in the world missing their best players. We all see the effects it has. But it will affect them going forward. But they still have the best squad, and I think they'll beat Dundalk tomorrow night. And I'm quite bullish about that, Marie, as well. I really think Dundalk are struggling. They've had a bad start, and I think Shamrock Rovers will beat them tomorrow.
Even with no Pico Lopez?
Even with no Pico Lopez. I'd love to know what Pico is doing in the hotel at the moment.
I know.
Because poor Pico is...
He's in quarantine, for anyone that didn't know. He came back from international duty and had to go to a hotel room for a couple of weeks, so it's tough going.
It is tough going, Marie, and obviously he was away, as you say, with Cape Verde on international duty, and that's great for him. But to come back, and I think Shamrock Rovers were quite proactive in getting him back early. He didn't play the second game of the international period because they knew had he played that, he'd be in quarantine for a lot longer and miss out a busy April period. So they got him back, but he will miss the game tomorrow. But I go back to the start of the tennis, the Australian Open. I remember all the videos of the tennis players playing tennis in the rooms and all. I can see Pico Lopez doing about 1,000 press ups, 1,000 sit ups, running up and down the hotel room, because he's a very fit lad and I'd like to think he'd be maintaining that. But it must be tough for him at the moment. All right,
it really must. Look, Bowes and Pats, I think, is another big one as well, and Bowes have had an iffy start, and that wasn't expected either when we were talking about the run into the champion to the league and how it would go.
No, I had them tipped to be contenders this year, Marie. I didn't think they'd win it, but I definitely thought they'd be up there, because they've been second and third the last couple of years. They've had a great run of it, really, and Keith Long and Trevor Crawley doing a brilliant job. And even looking at the recruitment at the start of the year, again, I felt they signed well and they were in good shape going into the season. And again, something like what we were saying about Dundalk, on paper their fixtures were Finn Harps away and Longford at home, so I had them down for 6 points, albeit Finn Harps, as we know, is a tough game away from home. But I definitely thought they'd maybe pick up four at a minimum, but definitely a good chance of getting six. But they've slipped up in both the games. They obviously got beat the opening night, and they were 2-0 up against Longford last week and ended up only drawing 2-2 at home. So that's a poor result, albeit Longford have had a good start. But for Bohemians point of view, that's a poor start. I'm heading into Daly Mount on Saturday. I'm looking forward to it, Marie, because St. Pat's on the other hand have had a good start, and they've picked up 4 points out of six. They beat Drogheda last week, and I felt that was important, that they followed up the good result that they got on the opening night against Shamrock Rovers, picking up a point and a good performance. And it was imperative that they followed up with a win against Drogheda, and they did that, albeit with a late goal, the 89th minute, Billy King getting the goal, but they got the 4 points. So St. Pat's are in good shape going into it. Bohemians, a little bit of improvement, a lot of improvement to do, really, and they need to get their season up and running, because even though I said they'd be contenders at the start, I always felt they'd be hanging on Shamrock Rovers' coattails, with maybe being 2, 3, 4 points behind them all season or whatever, and just hanging on to their coattails and just sticking in the race. But if they fall 7, 8, 9 points behind them with only 3 or 4 games gone, they're out of the race already, in my view. So they
sure
need to get
Horgan
a result on Saturday
now,
night.
Anyway, Alan.
Well, that's it. Ollie Horgan came out with a classic last week, Marie, where after getting... And if anybody doesn't know Ollie, he's a brilliant character, but he's a brilliant manager as well. And he's picked up 6 points, but I thought it was brilliant in the interview where he's always playing down the team's chances for anybody that doesn't know. And when he was asked about winning the two games and picking up 6 points against Bohemians and Dundalk as well, two great wins, he says, Asher, 6 points won't keep us up.
I think that's the perfect place.
It was a brilliant answer.
Alan Colley, thanks so much
answer.
For joining us. We're going to take a very quick break, and then Jane Mangan is with us.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, racing rolls on to Fairy House for their annual Easter festival this long weekend, and we're delighted to be joined by Jane Mangan. Jane, how are you?
I'm very much looking forward to the weekend ahead, Donegal.
It's like you with the rugby, Donegal.
Yeah. Jane, just before we get to it, there was great news today. RT Sport and Horse Racing Ireland have agreed a new broadcasting deal which will have live coverage of all Irish racing for the next 3 years. That is brilliant news.
That's super and very much a relief, I suppose, from my perspective. But I think any racing that's on terrestrial television, especially on the national broadcast, is a positive for the sport. And I think the deal means that we're recording a record number of days, rising in 2022 and 2023. So it's great. And in these times, we need to continue to look forward. And it's certainly something that brightened up my day.
It definitely brightened up our day as well, Jane. More of you. What more could we look for? So, Jane, the Irish Grand National, the Boyle Sports Irish Grand National, is the big one on Easter Monday. So for people who are just casually looking at the race, who should we be keeping an eye out for?
You know what? The Irish National, there's so many runners. They'll probably be a maximum field of 30. And it's a race that really anybody can have a punt in because it's so hard to win. It's very competitive. There's a few things that I would note. So this year, Tiger Roll is currently at the top of the weight, but we're not sure whether he's going to be declared tomorrow. He is 10 pounds the highest horse. So if he comes out tomorrow, that means the weight for all other horses will rise by 10 pounds, meaning a lot of jockeys can indulge in a few Easter eggs before Monday. But there is a few facts to take into account. You might like some horses at the top of the betting. I love Latest Exhibition. I think he's a fantastic horse. Escari at 10. Cocoa Beach, they're all horses with great credentials, but no horse since Flashing Seal in 1995 has carried more than 11-4 to win the Irish Grand National. So that's a long gap. Since 1995, no horse has carried more than 11-4. Put that in the back of your mind. That brings in horses like, I think, the big dog, a massive chance for Peter Fahey, and Jamie Codd, who's booked to take the ride. Far Clad, the Tyesta's winner, Home by the Lee, a novice for Joseph O'Brien, was very well fancied for the Paddy Power at Leopardstown when he came undone. And there's a lot of horses in there with chances. I mentioned Latest Exhibition. His connections have the option of going for the Nationals with that high weight or wait for or go on Sunday for the Underwriting Exchange novice chase, the Grade 1 novice chase over 2.5 miles, where he could potentially meet Energumene. Remember that name, Energumene? A couple of days before the Arkle at Cheltenham, he was a big, high-profile non-runner. We could see him back at Fairy House, and wouldn't that be very exciting?
Well, he just learned to pronounce him, and then didn't need to.
Jane, Henry de Bromhead, he targeted Sunday's Grade 1 Mare's novice hurdle with Honeysuckle in 2019. It seems like he's done it again here.
I think you're spot on. This is a very deep race, but there's a lot of mares in here that have gone to Cheltenham and are coming back very quick. Glens of Antrim, Galois, Hookup, these are all mares, Rosie's Hollow, who went to Cheltenham like Sky Ace and are hopefully going to come back around to Fairy House. But different horses can handle that and some can't. And Atlantic Fairy, I think it was a conscious decision for her connections to skip Cheltenham, come here fresh, and having won at Navan and Limerick on testing conditions, I think she's a mare on the up and is one coming from arguably the best in-form yard in the country of Henry de Bromhead at the moment and must be taken extremely seriously in that race.
Jen, we're tight in time, but one tip that you'd give us for the whole lot of it, your top tip.
I think the big dog each way in the National, it's the lottery of a race, but the prices should reflect that, and I hope he runs well racing.
And Jane, you form with tipping the big dog?
You know, it worked for me once, so stay loyal.
Absolutely, keep loyal. Jane, thanks so much. All the Fairy House is covered on RT Sport on Sunday and Monday from 2:30 on, so don't miss it. Okay, that's all we have time for. We're back tomorrow with the big one, Leinster taking on Toulon. A massive thank you to Jarlett Holland and Ronan Lawler. The brilliant Tara Stewart is up next.
Live across the nation, this is RT 2FM.